You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey, folks. We're doing a new crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com/kickasspolitics. That's Patreon spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. With Patreon, you can pledge a certain amount each month, and in return for helping to sustain the show, you're going to get some great new benefits like back episodes, exclusive content, show merchandise, shout-outs on the podcast, video hangouts, invitations to live events, and more. Again, go to patreon.com/kickasspolitics. Thanks for your support, and thanks for continuing to listen. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi. I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. Folks, I'm no psychic here, but I'm guessing there's a pretty good chance that you're listening to this podcast while you're stuck in freeway traffic driving either to or from work. At least that's what our listener survey tells me. So ponder this. The average American, that's you, spends about 18 hours a week behind the wheel of a car. More time than we spend on any activity other than working or sleeping. 4.3 years of your life that you're sitting in traffic, probably tired, stressed, and pissed off. Well, what if you could get all those hours back? What if you could spend that time working, reading, taking an online class, watching a movie, playing video games, taking a nap, or texting, which you're really not supposed to be doing while you're driving anyway? What if all that time was yours to use however you want? Well, get ready, because the dawn of the driverless car is coming, and it may be coming a lot sooner than you think. Just ask my guests today, who are at the forefront of the autonomous vehicle revolution. First, I'll talk about the technical aspects of autonomous cars with Dr. Raj Rajkumar. He's the George Westinghouse Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Carnegie Mellon University. Rajkumar is also a member of the Intelligent Transportation Systems Program Advisory Committee at the U.S. Department of Transportation, and he's co-director of the General Motors Carnegie Mellon Autonomous Driving Collaborative Research Lab, which is leading the way in the development and testing of self-driving cars. He'll talk about some of the technical hurdles they're grappling with, including weather conditions and interacting with those pesky human drivers. He'll reveal how the interior of your car may one day look very different, and he'll address the looming concerns about potential cyber attacks and how to prevent them. Then I'll talk with Doug Newcomb, a journalist who's covered car technology for nearly 3 decades as senior technology editor at Edmunds.com and as a contributor to Wired Magazine, Forbes, PCMagazine.com, MSN Autos, and Automotive IT News, on various subjects of automotive technology. He's the founder and president of the C3 Group and the Connected Car Council, which are driving the conversation, no pun intended, in the burgeoning industry of autonomous vehicles. He'll talk about the potential for self-driving cars to save millions of lives, reduce traffic, and help us better use our time. He'll talk about the Hearts and Minds campaign to convince car-loving Americans to let go of their steering wheel and embrace autonomous vehicles, and the amazing ways in which the driverless revolution is going to change not just how we get around, but our whole economy and our culture. He'll discuss what kind of federal regulation may be involved and how Google is leading the way to cut government red tape and open the roads to autonomous cars. Plus, we'll talk about the very real possibility that one day soon, it may be against the law for you to drive your own car, and why that's maybe not such a bad thing. Coming up in just a moment.
From Hollywood to Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Today I'm joined by Raj Rajkumar, who is the George Westinghouse Professor in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at Carnegie Mellon University and co-director of the GM Carnegie Mellon Autonomous Driving Collaborative Research Lab. Raj Rajkumar, tell me about this partnership between GM and Carnegie Mellon.
GM has been working with Carnegie Mellon University since the year 2000. They actually started this lab looking at vehicular information technology. In 2006, when DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the U.S. military's research arm, launched this competition called the DARPA Urban Challenge. The idea was for vehicles without anybody in them to drive around for 60 miles in fewer than 6 hours in an urban-like setting, interacting with other autonomous vehicles as well as human-driven vehicles, obeying the same rules of the road that you and I have to obey. And the GM became, having a relationship with us already, became our biggest partner and sponsor. And our team from Carnegie Mellon won that $2 million prize.
Interesting.
And so GM said, wow, and started the second lab on autonomous driving. And since then, we have built the next generation platform, making a 2011 Cadillac SRX, a crossover SUV from GM, of course, made it autonomous. We actually tested it on the roads of Pittsburgh. We actually have tested it in Washington, D.C., and so on.
I'm excited for driverless cars. How long do you think I'm going to have to wait?
That depends upon what you're waiting for.
I don't want to do anything. Fully autonomous.
I see. So for example, yes. So I think if you just wanted to actually drive from point A to point B in a city in California, we are right now in Los Angeles, it's not raining out here and there's no snow out here, of course. So basically it is easier to drive in a region like this.
Okay.
But if you go further up north where you can basically, so think Alaska where GM has to sell and maintain cars, where you can basically have heavy snow, you can actually have fallen leaves on the road and then the fall and so on, it gets trickier. So if you want to be able to drive anywhere in the U.S., it could take up to 10 years.
So is that one of the biggest hurdles right now is figuring out how to deal with weather conditions like rain or snow?
Yeah, so those are the so-called known unknowns, how these vehicles will behave in bad weather conditions. Lighting conditions can play a role as well. And of course, road conditions can change significantly. Sinkhole opens up or a pothole opens up and a construction zone just pops up instantaneously. How do you deal with those unexpected situations? Those are the known
Interesting.
Unknowns.
So then what kind of technology would be involved in solving problems like that?
So primarily, it is a sensing challenge for the most part. A computer to actually drive a vehicle, it needs sensors. We use cameras, radars, and lasers to sense what's going on. They have their own strengths and weaknesses. For example, think of a camera. If the sun is basically low on the horizon, and even as we as humans looking at it, we can get partially blinded, and cameras do not do well. In dark, they do not see well. Radar can see through the dark, fog, and a little bit of rain and snow. LiDARs do well at night. But if there's snow, basically it reflects the laser beams and causes a lot of noise. So you really have to bring these things together and deal with bad weather conditions, particularly heavy rain and heavy snow. We don't quite know how to deal with them.
Okay.
And in an urban setting, there are what we call lots of occlusions, basically people basically walking in front of cars, behind cars, and so on, and suddenly pop up. And we as humans know to expect these things, but for computers, it becomes much harder.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've heard about is that the test cars follow the law to the letter. And they're not aggressive in the ways that humans are. So sometimes you may have one that comes to a four-way stop with three other human drivers, and it'll just sit there while everyone jumps into the intersection and goes ahead.
Great point, Ben. So here is the dilemma. A self-driving vehicle can basically be courteous, follow the rules, and everybody just keeps going by, yeah, and you're stuck there. Conversely, if you're aggressive and something goes wrong, God forbid you hit somebody or something, now everybody will basically jump on the autonomous vehicle and say, look, you screwed up.
Right.
So that's the dilemma that
we're on the side of caution.
Yes.
Okay, but I guess let's say, like here in L.A., you know, you may not have this in other places, but here in L.A., if you come to a light and you want to make a left turn, you literally, and I had to learn this when I first came out here, you have to get out in the intersection and wait for a yellow or a red light, and then you punch it. And would an autonomous vehicle ever do that?
In principle, particularly in California, the laws actually, at least by the letter, are very stringent. So if a ticket violation is deemed to have happened, who gets to pay that? Who's liable?
Yeah.
So that's one approach.
That's
the other approach
issue
is that maybe we don't make left turns anymore. We make three rights, which is likely equivalent to a left turn.
Interesting. Oh, okay. I never thought about that. Do you think that that might be a possibility?
Yeah, it turns out that UPS...
It definitely simplifies the problem.
Yes. So it turns out that UPS trucks and FedEx trucks, they actually use this algorithm, if you will, to basically minimize the delays waiting for making a left turn. And at those points is when accidents tend to happen.
Yeah.
So they basically minimize both their latencies, their delays, as well as liability issues when trying to make a left by making instead three right turns.
One other thing that's come up, you know, we have this thing in our brain where we get uneasy, like physically queasy, when we see ourselves moving, but we're not physically in control of that movement. And I've heard some stories of people getting a little car sick with driverless cars. Has that problem been solved yet, or is that just something that people will gradually adjust to?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Nobody has asked me that question before. My wife basically is very similar. When she's sitting in the front passenger seat and I drive like a maniac, she basically gets upset. So I do slow down when my wife is in the front passenger seat. So I guess just to me, two things will happen. One is that there will be an interface in the car that's driving itself, where the vehicle actually will communicate to the user, to the people in the car, what it is trying to do, so the human is comfortable about what the vehicle is up to.
Okay.
And me.
And in the first generation, for people's comfort level, will there be some kind of an override or the option for them to drive? Is that something that's come up as something that, you know, at least emotionally, people want to have that option? They're afraid to hand over complete control immediately.
Yes. So in the near term, until this technology has been proven to be ultra reliable on the roads, a human licensed human driver will be expected to be in the driver's seat, even if the vehicle is driving itself. And then as the technology, and then at that point in time, if the vehicle is doing something not quite common that makes the human uncomfortable, they would have the option of overriding the car. And as this basically, these disengagements, as we call them, become fewer and fewer over time, approach zero, that's when the human can be taken out of the equation.
In the long term, what will these cars look like? Interior, will we have a steering wheel? Will we have brakes? Or I've heard people say that they'll be basically like mobile living rooms.
A few decades from now, when this technology is pretty much is the way to actually transport people from one point to another, a few things can happen. So like you said, the car could be a living room. Could be a playroom, could even be a bedroom, if you will, for people to basically extend their sleep during commute.
That sounds like trouble.
So those are, and then it turns out that if accidents are so few in number or kind of get eliminated in certain parts, you don't no longer need a steel cage around you. So maybe you could just replace that with a light aluminum cage of some kind. So this could bring about revolutions in many different ways.
You know what the big concern that a lot of people have is? Cyber hacking, of someone hacking a car and doing God knows what with it. What kind of technology are you working on to prevent that?
This is a major and legitimate concern. Particularly these autonomous self-driving vehicles will be connected. They can actually talk to the cloud, and actually they can talk to other vehicles on the road. They can actually talk to the traffic signals and so on. Basically means that they also become pathways for attacks from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Both car makers and technology developers like myself, we are actually losing a lot of sleep over, hey, how can we prevent these attacks from the outside? We do not have the silver bullet yet, but we are very cognizant, conscious of these problems. And when these technologies are developed, deployed out there, we need to make sure that these attacks do not harm people and property.
Do you think that it'll come down to just somehow hardening that technology so that they can't hack it? Or will it come down to having some kind of an override, either within the individual car or within the whole system, that can somehow shut down these vehicles safely before accidents can happen if someone was hacked?
Yeah, so most of that defensive technology, if you will, has to be inside the car. If you basically had a centralized platform somewhere like a city command center which can control our cars, that becomes a much bigger target for cyber attacks as well.
Right.
So you really want that local intelligence for local decision-making. And the fact that we are operating in a physical world, we can basically say, look, I see things around me and I'm being told to drive fast. This doesn't make sense. And the system would shut down locally.
In theory, autonomous vehicles would not have road rage. We don't have to worry about some kind of HAL-like AI computer getting ticked off and ramming someone on the freeway.
So humans, I guess, we have these two sides. On one side, we actually are very rational beings. On the other side, we can be very emotional beings. So what this quote-unquote AI brings to the table is that it tries to be rational at all times and does not have any emotions.
Yeah.
So we can cover up for the shortcomings of humans.
But I talked to at least one human who's not looking forward to the age of self-driving cars.
Hi, my name's Jay. I am an Uber driver. I am a stand-up comedian in Los Angeles, California. I consider this the job that supports my career.
Okay.
I live in Los Angeles. You don't get paid to do comedy out here. So this is the job that covers the bills. 2015 was a really bad year for drivers. We took a massive pay cut with no benefits whatsoever, like no plus side to it.
What if I told you that Uber has been cutting your rates and the rates of all the Uber drivers because within the next 10 years, they're going to make a huge capital outlay on driverless vehicles?
Oh, for sure. Once automated vehicles become a thing, why would Uber ever want to, why would they ever even be interested in employing, you know, someone like me or something that needs that? And then I'm going to be 100% honest. I am not even remotely comfortable with the automated car concept anyways. You know, they're essentially working drivers to the bone in order to never have to need them again.
Is there something that you, a human driver, offer customers that they might not get from a self-driving Uber?
I guess I'm a big dude. I could always provide protection and walk someone to their door, which I have done multiple times. If somebody's getting dropped off in a not so great neighborhood or it's dark out, you know, I'm a good conversationalist. I meet a lot of people. And sometimes people, you know, want to have somebody to talk to. Maybe somebody needs to be calmed down. You have no idea how many times I've had conversations in the background of people on their phone having an emotional breakdown and they hang up the phone and you just be there and let them talk it out. And it's going to be hard to do that when it's a camera and some circuits.
And while that's certainly cheaper than hiring a therapist, Raj Kumar says my Uber driver Jay might be overestimating his value as a good listener when compared to the billions that driverless vehicles could save both Uber and their customers. If you're an Uber driver, should you not be counting on that for a lifetime job security?
I guess the CEO of Uber, Travis Kalanick, he has said that one of their motivations to invest in this technology, to develop their own intellectual property portfolio, is to basically have the human be replaced by computers. That makes a huge difference to both their top line, that is their incoming revenue, and their bottom line, their profits. So I guess when these technologies take
probably
hold,
not the job of the future.
It would Uber disrupt driver. Not just the taxi drivers, if you will, or yeah. Uber drivers, but also the trucking industry, bus drivers, and so on.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious if you anticipate a lot of pushback from unions then.
So I guess these changes will happen, but it's not going to happen overnight, and this will actually happen gradually. For example, even when vehicles are allowed to drive themselves, at least for a couple of years, if not longer, the human would still be required to be in the driver's seat, ready to take over just in case.
Okay.
And so there'll be lots of time for both the labor force and the economy to adjust and find new jobs, trying to troubleshoot, diagnose, fix these high-tech gadgets in the car.
Do you like to drive?
I love to drive.
What do you say to the people who would say, I love to just hit the open road on the weekend and go on a drive up the coast or just clear my mind on a drive?
But it's kind of ironic that I love to drive myself and I spend most of my time working on this technology that takes the driver out of the equation. So what I do see happening is the following. Even those people who actually have a passion for driving, who love driving, do not and cannot enjoy being stuck in traffic. Think of Los Angeles traffic or Washington, D.C. or New York. So this technology is about taking those monotonous rage-inducing episodes and then replacing them with some productive time that you could be spending elsewhere.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I'll talk with a man who's been covering auto technology for 30 years, and he says the driverless revolution is coming faster than we realize, and it's about to change everything. When we come back, in just a moment. Hey folks, do you like reading but you find it's getting harder and harder to make time to curl up with a good book? Well, there's a solution. Give audiobooks a try. They're perfect for your commute to work or if you're working out at the gym, a relaxing bath, or any time really. And right now, you can take an audiobook for a spin with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. to get a free 30-day trial and download any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show. I'm joined by Doug Newcomb. He's a journalist who's covered car technology for nearly three decades, and he was a senior technology editor at Edmunds.com. He's president and founder of the Connected Car Council. Doug, how far are we?
Well, you know what? I often tell people, they're here. They're already here. Some of the cars, production cars now, can pretty much drive themselves. I was driving a C-Class Mercedes. God, this was like two or three years ago. And the car can drive itself. They have sensors in the steering wheel, so you have to have your hands on the steering wheel or it deactivates. Look at Tesla Autopilot. The technology's here. There are other things that are keeping it from becoming mainstream, a lot of things, but mainly policy and consumer acceptance.
But who's at the forefront?
Google, obviously. You know, funny, because right when Google first started announcing their autonomous car plans, I remember I was here at the LA Auto Show in 2010, about that time, and Audi had a whole video at the show about their Audi TT going up Pikes Peak. But it was interesting. It's almost reflexively automakers say, well, we've been working on that for years. We've been working on autonomous cars for decades. But boy, I tell you, once Google got involved, they seemed to really get it in gear, you know, no pun intended. But at this
point,
they
want to protect their territory.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Google, I credit Google for like going, okay, we're going to do this, you know, and automakers are like, well, we're doing it too, you know. But I'd say from an automaker perspective, Audi has been very, pioneering in it. You said they were one of the first. Ford's doing a lot in the space. GM as well. They're introducing a system called Super Cruise. It's basically a lane centering technology. Nissan is doing a lot in the space. Pretty much everyone. Toyota is doing a lot around artificial intelligence. Mercedes-Benz, BMW. It's almost easier to name the companies that aren't doing a lot in autonomous cars.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I saw that Mercedes concept car that they did.
Yeah, yeah.
That looks incredible to me.
Yeah, yeah. The Luxury in Motion, the F1, F 105, I think it was.
I keep telling friends of mine about that, and I'm like, the seats swivel.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The front seats swivel. You can be having a conversation with the people it's almost in back.
It's almost become a meme now. I first heard it at a Mercedes-Benz event at their lab in Silicon Valley. Mercedes was saying that we'll see more changes in the next 10 years in automotive than we have in the last 50. I think it's going to be less than that. I think it's going to be more like 5 years. I mean, we're already seeing it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will probably flip out a little bit when you say we want to take the driver out of the equation. How are you going to get past that initial hesitation?
32,000 people die on roads every year. You know, that would be like a 747 going down every week. Put it in perspective. There was an interesting article in Time Magazine recently. I've been hearing more about this, saying that when we get to the point where we're saving so many lives by cars driving themselves, well, we reach a point where it says, no, people can't drive anymore. It's illegal. How dare you? Think about how dare you smoke, where, 20 years ago, or whatever, we didn't think, really anything. I remember being clubs here in LA where people were smoking. It was part of it. But now it's like, wait, that's the point that we could get to.
This idea that people-driven cars, regular cars as we know them, would be outlawed. Is that something that we seriously would be looking at, say, 10 years down the road?
I think it's further down the road. I mean, it could happen. I mean, people are speculating that now just for the reasons I just mentioned. No one really knows. But, some people have made the analogy that driving a car will be like riding a horse in the future. You want to drive your car, go out to a track or go out to some place that, there's not people around or what have you.
Right.
I mean, I can't predict the future. I wish I could. But I think I could see that being where there's already certain parts of Europe, cities in Europe, where they don't allow people to drive. I could see that, there's not driving in city centers and things like that. There's other forms of transportation. And part of that will be autonomous.
Well, it does make sense to me. I mean, if you have all the cars on a freeway communicating with each other, going at the same rate, and everyone's getting where they need to be safely and on time, throwing some little old lady driving down in her old Buick or just some nut who's cutting in and out of lanes because he thinks that he's getting there faster. It totally makes sense that that would be a problem.
Right.
That just gums up the works.
Right. I mean, I'm looking, we're looking out here at traffic here, and LA's notorious, obviously, and like anything, right? It's a trade-off.
I assume then that once autonomous vehicles take hold, that there are going to eventually be fewer vehicles on the roads because you're able to utilize one car to a maximal extent.
Right. Yeah. And I think that we're seeing some big shifts in car ownership, or we will. And we're already starting to see that. I have a couple of nieces that live in San Francisco, one owns a car, one doesn't. She has no interest. She's in her mid-20s. She has no interest in having a car just because it's a pain, and she uses Lyft and Uber and public transportation. We're seeing a lot of that. One interesting statistic is that public transportation usage is way up. Last year in 2015, it was way up across the country. I remember reading in Phoenix. I didn't even know Phoenix had a public transportation. It's like so there's a shift too, where people are saying, you think about it, it's really a poor investment. You buy this thing that sits most of the day.
Right.
It's the second most largest purchase most people ever make. You don't use it that much, but yet you have to pay to store it, you have to pay to maintain it, you have to pay to insure it. So, I mean, there's a lot of compelling reasons, and besides the fact we mentioned the deaths in this country from traffic accidents, for autonomous cars and to shift away from personal car ownership.
So a family of four with two teenagers won't necessarily have to own four cars anymore, because they can just send the car to pick the kids up and then come get you. And the car can be just running around like a personal assistant.
Right. But, I also think about, to answer your question about driving, now I live in a pretty good rural area. I live up in Oregon, about an hour outside of Portland. And there's a lot of farms and orchards, there's still going to be a lot of need for trucks, I mean, the best-selling pickup best-selling vehicle for the last 30 years has been the Ford F-150 pickup, they'll probably have self-driving pickups, but, I think about that. America's a big country. U.S. is a big country.
Which states are the hotbeds of activity for driverless cars right now?
Well, California, I think, is one of them.
In terms of testing, I mean.
Yeah, and California definitely, because Google has done most of their testing here. But, you know, the other state that's really, not surprisingly, maybe it's surprising to people, is Michigan. It's really making a big push because of the auto industry. University of Michigan has a facility there called M-City that's used for autonomous testing. Nevada, because they've been very... very proactive, and they were the first to issue autonomous license. So I would say those pretty much.
And have most of the local and state governments been fairly helpful and open to driverless cars?
Yeah. You know what we're seeing that's very interesting? In fact, I write for Forbes. I did two blog posts last week. One was on very interesting and talking to some of people in DC. You could tell it was a pretty big deal. Last week, Ford, Volvo, Google, Uber, and Lyft formed a coalition to basically the idea is to push the federal government to adopt at a federal level, autonomous vehicle regulation. Because what they're seeing, and Google has talked about this and others, there's this patchwork of regulation by state. And, you know, so California has one regulation, Nevada has another, on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So they want to have the federal government set policy so that there's a blanket policy and regulation.
Well, that would make sense because, I mean, you know, it's like the national highway system. You know, right. You don't want to get an autonomous vehicle and only be able to drive it in California.
Right, exactly. And I think like any industry, you know, they want to have some uniformity. It's interesting. Google's been very, very – I've done a couple of blog posts. In fact, I don't know if you're aware, back in February, I think it was, they got NHTSA, National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, that sets policy for vehicles to classify their – technology as a driver. It was basically
the technology itself, as a driver in place of a human being.
Correct.
So, okay.
Correct.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of regulatory hurdles do you anticipate?
Well, I mean, I've worked with a lot of the policymakers in DC, event we did recently at South by Southwest. We had Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox there. And I've heard him speak and saying, you know, here's the thing, the technology is moving so quickly. You know, we start putting policy in place now, it's going to be at least 18 months or 2 years before the policy is, you know, passed or what have you. The technology is going to move on. It's coming. And I think they know they have to stay ahead of it. But I think that's kind of the big push for a lot of people. But the challenges are just that, staying ahead of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of challenges. I mean, from a liability standpoint, I think the lawyers will figure that out.
I think that's the thing everyone wants to know. Mm-hmm. If you get in an accident with a driverless car, who's at fault?
Right, right. Well, you know,
have
it's
we
interesting.
That out?
Well, that's interesting because there's been some really interesting research done. Stanford's really doing a lot. They have a couple of programs there around autonomous cars and artificial intelligence. But coming out of the robotics program, you know, someone mentioned to me there's already a lot of liability or legal frameworks in place that govern robotics. So it's not unprecedented, put it that way. You know, I mean, it's unprecedented as far as applying it to cars.
Right.
But, you know, there's some precedents here. And someone, the president of Audi of America, Scott Keogh, was at an event in CES one year, and he said, you know, we've had adaptive cruise control on the road for over a decade now. Adaptive cruise control basically keeps you from running into the car in front of you. It maintains the speed. And he said, we haven't had any lawsuits. You know, I think the lawyers are going to figure that out. I'm not really concerned about the liability aspect of it.
Okay.
I think I'm more concerned about the regulation.
Now, some people have said that the actual car companies themselves would be liable and would have insurance for this.
Yeah, this year, I think it was within the last year, put it that way, both Volvo and Mercedes-Benz have come out and said, we will assume liability for self-driving vehicles. Volvo's now doing a 100-vehicle test in Gothenburg, Sweden, their hometown. They recently announced they're doing one in China. And then just last week, they announced they're doing one in London. So I think that shows how much they believe in the technology thing. We will assume liability.
Yeah, from a PR standpoint, that's a pretty good move to show that much confidence in their product that they're willing to take that risk.
Yeah, and the technology, like I said, I mean, these sensors, you know, whether it's a camera, radar sensor, LiDAR sensor, what have you, you know, they're always on. They're always scanning ahead and around. You know, they're not changing a radio station or, you know, daydreaming or or yelling at the kids in the back. I mean, the technology works very well.
I think it's largely a matter of changing the public's perspective on what's safe and what isn't. Because human error and drunk driving, like you mentioned earlier, lead to more deaths and injury by far than driverless cars probably ever could, even if you did have a hack.
Right.
How does the industry intend to change our culture and our way of thinking and get us to think about risk in a more rational and less emotional way with driverless?
Boy, that's going to be the tough one. I feel like once people understand the benefits of technology and are not afraid of it, you know, once, like I said, you know, myself, I mean, I drink the Kool-Aid, but, you know, can get in a car and have it drive you home at night from the airport when you're tired, when, you know, you can be in your car and have it drive you through maddening LA traffic and, you know, you can be productive, when, you know, you can have a driverless taxi take you home after you've had too much to drink, you know, on and on and on. I think once we see those benefits, and here's the thing, you know, besides the 32,000 people that die every year. That's not even including people who are injured. That doesn't include the, you know, I think it's billions of dollars that are wasted because of accidents, whether it's lost productivity or you know, have damage to the car. But there's also a lot of other benefits, and there's the benefits are almost too compelling for us not to adopt it. Think about the amount of fuel that's wasted from people sitting in traffic. I saw this report from this company, Enrix. They do traffic data analysis. They said that 1/4 of greenhouse gases come from vehicles, and a lot of that comes from vehicles idling. You know, there's also become kind of a cliche that like 1/3 of the traffic in San Francisco is caused by people circling the block looking for a parking spot. You know, we haven't talked about that automated parking. So beyond, you know, there's so many benefits that can come from this technology. It's just, I think it's too compelling not to adopt it.
Well, I think I'm sold. I'm telling you, front swiveling seats. Yes, that's all you had to say to me.
It's going to be here before we know it. I really believe that.
Well, Doug Newcomb, thanks so much for sitting down to talk to me about driverless cars.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I'm ready. I'm ready right now. Freaking swiveling front seats, people. Come on. Thanks to Raj Kumar, Doug Newcomb, and Jay the Uber driver for coming on the podcast. You can follow Doug Newcomb on Twitter at Doug Newcomb. There's no E on the end there. Or at DougNewcomb.com. And find out more about the Connected Car Council at c3report.com. You have to spell that out. It's C as in Charlie, the word 3, then report. My other guest, Raj Kumar, is not on Twitter, but he gave a fascinating TED Talk about driverless cars, and it's definitely worth checking out. So go to TED.com and just search his name. And if you want to learn more about the GM Carnegie Mellon Autonomous Driving Collaborative Research Lab, visit gm.web.cmu.edu. Please subscribe to Kickass Politics on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. And you can also help us reach our fundraising goal for the year and get rewarded by donating to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/kickasspolitics. Follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics or visit Kickass Politics on Facebook. And while you're there, recommend Kick-Ass Politics to your friends on your social media. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.